Welcome to another episode of Hair Biz Radio with your hosts, Zakira and
Mikey.
And we are joined today with a very special guest. You guys are going to love this conversation because everyone has questions about legal when it comes to your business. We have the beauty business lawyer, Rihanna Green, with us.
Hi.
And she is a hairstylist turned attorney. So we're going to get into the greatness of the conversation. We're going to get into it. And I'm excited to actually hear about your story, your journey, because I don't think I've heard of someone going to hair school and then going to be an attorney, the other flip side of it. So I'm excited about that. How are you today?
I'm doing good. It's Thursday, I think, most of the time. Yeah, so it's a good day.
Awesome. Love it. Mikey, what's new? What's going on?
You know what? Before we
dive in.
We always have like a little intro, me and Zakira, kind of what's going on, what's new. I'm going to have to save that for the next episode we record, because this podcast episode, I get more questions in my Hair Business Blueprint Facebook group about all sorts of legal stuff. We have the expert here today. Whatever I have going on, I don't care. Let's get into the gems.
Yeah. The
nuggets, information that you guys want to know.
The nitty gritty.
Okay. Let's do it. So we know we actually recorded a video about how to start a hair business just in general, specifically in 2024. The first thing that stays consistent is the legal part of it. Before you even dive into a business, you need to make sure that you have your legal affairs in order. So what other way to discuss that, go deep, than to have the expert herself with us today? So let's just start off with your background. Kind of how did you, because you were a hairstylist first, how did you even get into be a hairstylist? Was that something you grew up doing? Did you grow up around hair, beauty, or what made you want to get into hair?
I've always been into the beauty realm, hair, nails, makeup. It's always been my thing since high school. And when I was in high school, they had a program where you could get your cosmetology license through elective credits.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. I was in beauty school. I got licensed as a nail tech at 16. And then I got licensed as a hairstylist at 17. So I've actually technically been a hairstylist now for a long time. I just renewed. My renewal came up, and I always renew because I'm I still need
at any
discount.
Moment. Yeah,
I still need discounts.
Yeah. I love that. Okay, and let's just get into the beat face. Okay, if you're watching on YouTube, just lean in. Get into the beat face. Okay, so you started off in high school, hair, beauty, makeup. So you did that for how long?
I did that all through law school. So that took me through undergrad as well as law school. I really thought at one point that I was just going to do hair forever. And I don't say just do hair forever, but I was like, I don't want to go to school anymore.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do hair. I'm going to, create a business out of this. And I remember my brother told me one time, he was like, why don't you want to go to law school? I was like, it's just a lot of work, a lot of time. I don't want to be in school for 7 years. And my brother gave me the really good advice that was like, Rihanna, the time is going to go by regardless. Like whether you're behind the chair or whether you're in school and behind the chair, the time is going to go by regardless. And so I kind of took that little nugget and was like, okay, I'm going to still do hair.
Really good perspective.
Yeah, it is, because it does go by.
Yeah.
So I still did hair. I was going to school, and then I finished my bachelor's and then went to law school. And did hair all throughout law school. It helped pay bills. And then finally, I always say, I hung up my apron after I passed the bar. And hung up my apron, and I haven't done hair since. But I'm still in the realm.
Nice. I love that. That's exciting, because initially you were just going to do hair. Have you always wanted to be an attorney? Or was there a point between you going to hair school and you having that conversation with your brother, kind of an in-between of you deciding that you wanted to be an attorney?
No, I always wanted to be an attorney ever since I was little. I was the Law and Order junkie in fourth grade. Okay. The OG Law and Order.
That sounds like me. We were kids, and my brother on the weekends, they would like to watch cartoons and stuff. And I would be turning the channel to Judge Hatchett, because I'm like, who doesn't love Judge Hatchett? I wanted to be a judge when I was younger. Yeah, so I was people looking at me girl, you are 8.
Exactly.
Why do you watch the Judge Hatchett?
I was always into the courtroom shows. So I just was like, no, I always wanted to be a lawyer. But then I really loved doing hair. I really loved being in the beauty industry. And I was like, they make good money too.
Mm-hmm.
They still are their own bosses. They get to come and go as they please, all that kind of stuff. And so I was like, no, I'm just going to do hair. That's going to be my career. I want to be a hairstylist.
So you married the two.
Yes.
We love it. So getting started, I'm assuming when you started your hair business, I'm not going to assume, I'm going to ask you, when you started your hair business, did you have a trademark going into your hair business? Did you have contracts? Did you have your LLC? Were you like set up legally when you first started?
No, I was not set up legally.
Okay.
And so that's kind of one of my favorite things to talk about, because okay. I feel like when I talk to beauty professionals, I am not coming from a lecture standpoint, like this is what you should do, this is what you should do, and you're doing it completely wrong if you're not doing these things legally, because I wasn't doing these things legally to begin with either. And so I didn't have any of this stuff. I was literally the hairstylist behind the chair mixing up my bleach, like, okay, so let's do your hair history right now. No box color, right? Like, no consent forms, no intake forms. I wasn't using any of it. And so it wasn't until I really kind of got out of the hair realm and was working for an insurance company doing insurance defense. So I was defending salons when I really realized, like, wow, stylists are like grossly underprotected.
Absolutely.
And that's when I was like, that's when the mirroring really came into play, because I was like, I feel like I can reach them because I am one, right? Like, I am a beauty professional.
Yeah.
And they don't know what they don't know, just like I didn't know what I didn't know when I was behind the chair.
Love it. So when you passed the bar and you became an attorney, did you know that you always wanted to do, like, represent beauty professionals, or was that something that it evolved into?
That's something it evolved into. Okay. I started off as a traditional lawyer, as they say. I was a prosecutor. So okay. I prosecuted for 5 years. I did some time in Clayton County. If you're from Georgia, you're familiar. San Diego County in California. And then I wanted to do something different. That's when I did insurance defense. And then it was there that I was like, oh, wow, I got my first salon case. And I told my supervisor, I was like, this is really cool because I know what's going on here. Like, I know what the complaints are. I know both sides of it. So I know the legal, and I know, you know, the chemistry and, you know, the cleanliness and all that perspective of it. And that is when She Trademarks was born, because I was like, wow, beauty professionals need help and I can help them.
Yeah, I love it. So was there any, or what obstacles did you run into from not having your legal situated when you became a stylist?
So I think, like many beauty professionals, especially from like a sue standpoint, we think like, I don't know anyone who's ever been sued. I don't need to have the contracts in place. I don't need to have the intake forms in place, that kind of thing. And I was that person too. But when I started working on the insurance side, I started realizing like, no, people are actually getting sued. I know, because I'm representing them. And then from a trademark standpoint, I had always worked for big companies like Supercuts, Master Clips, like spas, things like that. So I never really was an independent contractor with my own brand name.
Got it.
But now on this side of things, I can tell you numerous times I've had people come to sit down for consultations and they end up crying because they can't own the name that they've built their brand on because someone else does.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I think insurance, contracts, all that, it's kind of in the back of your mind and you don't know you need it until you need it.
Right.
That's not a pretty situation.
Never a pretty situation. And it's often really, really sad because people don't know. They think they're doing everything right, right? They like, maybe they have an accountant or a CPA, and so they're doing that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then they're putting legal off. And I see this happen all the time. I meet with people, and then they're like, yeah, I want to get trademarks, but I have to get my branding photo shoot done, and I need a website, and I need all these other things. And so they kind of put it off towards the back burner, right? Just because it's not kind of the sexy part of your business, legal isn't. You'd rather have like pretty fly photos and, you know, all these different things. But it's kind of the one thing that will make or break your business.
Yeah.
Because those photos, your branding photos, the products that you created, the website, it doesn't matter if all of a sudden someone knocks on your door, you get hand delivered a letter, like you have to change your brand name.
Right.
Because now you have to do all of that all over again.
Whew. That's a lot, especially if you've built it to a point where you're making a lot of money and you've built, you have clientele and everything that is like banking on the brand name that you made. It's like if you take that extra step, you can kind of.
Well, for sure. I kind of say it's like you don't want to build a house on shoddy foundation, right?
Yeah.
You wouldn't build a house on land you don't own.
Yeah.
Because then someone comes say, love the house that you built. Great. But you got to move out because I actually own this land.
Yeah.
And it's like the same thing. You build a brand on a brand you don't own and someone can come say like, hey, love the brand that you built. Great. But you can't use it because it's my name. I own it.
So if someone has, let's just say they've built their business, they've been doing it for 5 or so years, and they did not trademark it. However, another brand starts using it within that 5 years, but the person who doesn't have it trademarked has been utilizing it for longer. Are there any things that they can do or steps that they can take to actually claim it, even though the other person went to file for the trademark?
Okay, so in your scenario, they've been using it longer, but someone mm-hmm. else goes to file before them for right. the trademark. Okay, mm-hmm. so when it comes to trademarks, there's a rule called first in line, first in time. Mm. And that is really important because we say first in line when we're referring to the USPTO, the United States Patent and Trademark Office. So first in line means that's going to be the first person to file, right? And usually, if no one else is using it, mm-hmm. then they have priority, okay? That's where first in time comes to play in, because first in time may have priority over that person first in line because they've been using it longer.
Got it.
So in your scenario, they've been using it longer, so they technically have priority rights as a senior rights holder because they've been using it longer. But that other person filed first, so they're first in time. So now you end up in this huge situation in which you're going to have to fight a lot harder and spend a lot more money yeah. to get your brand name simply because they filed first. So that means their application is going to get examined first, which means now you have to, one, file an application quickly because mm-hmm. you don't want to now be behind maybe someone else that could potentially file.
Right.
And then two, you have to monitor their trademark so that you can oppose them so they don't get registered. And oppositions in trademark proceedings can be really expensive. Like then you're in trademark litigation.
So basically what you're saying is instead of not wanting to spend a couple thousand dollars to get it done initially, you may want to go ahead and just invest in that money. That way on the back end, you're not spending tens of thousands of dollars.
Correct. I say that all the time. It's so much better to be proactive than it is to be reactive.
Yeah.
Because a trademark can cost you, let's say, $2,850 on average, right? With attorney's fees and then filing fees. But if you wait and someone else trademarks and you have to either do an opposition proceeding or a full-on cancellation proceeding, you're looking at like $25,000 plus. And on average, it's around $100,000 like all in total to fully cancel a trademark.
Wow. That's yeah.
brutal.
That is. Brutal. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
brutal. You know, it's funny because I just recently, after multiple years of getting the name, not just like a logo, but isn't it right that it's like, if you want the name trademarked, it's more difficult than say like a logo image, right?
Correct.
So I remember a couple years ago when I had a meeting with my lawyer, this is before I even knew you. And we said, you know, I was like, I want to trademark private label. And he's like, okay, Mikey, this is going to be tough yeah. because private label is like, that is a name, you know? And I was like, okay, well, I have this idea, this, that, the other. And he's like, okay, we can go for it, but I'm about 99% sure they're going to say absolutely not, and we're going to have to file the opposition and all that. It was a multi-year, very expensive process. I do have the private label trademark, by the way. But it's one of those things, like, you go in, so that opens up the question is, if someone comes to you to get a trademark, and are you able to look at their brand, what they have so far, do a little bit of research and say, okay, so-and-so, your chances of getting this trademark are probably about this. They might oppose it. We're going to have to come up with our own. It's like a study kind of thing. You know, are you able to give them a pretty good, reasonable, you know, win case or like win result?
So what we do is we always start any trademark application by doing a thorough and comprehensive trademark search. So that's kind of the number one thing you want to do, because before you file the application, you want to know if it's going to be successful or not before you kind of put that money and invest into your business. So we always start with a thorough trademark search. What else is out there? How likely is it that you're going to be successful at getting your trademark approved? So when we do that, we will rate your trademark on a risk level, low, moderate, or high risk. Low risk, I kind of describe as being something that's like, listen, you're good to go. You're going to get to your trademark in record time. I give the hypothetical of like, if you're on the freeway trying to get to a baby shower, you're not going to have any issues. You're going to get there. Moderate means there's something else out there that may cause you problems. You're likely to have like a detour on your way to the baby shower, mm-hmm. right? And high risk means like your name is either way too descriptive, like to where they're not going to approve it, or there's something else out there that is directly on point that's going to block you. And I always say that's kind of like when you're in dead stop traffic, maybe there's like a fatal collision or something mm-hmm. and no one's getting anywhere, meaning you are going to miss the baby shower. You're never going to make it to your end destination.
Basically what she's saying is I detoured around the the, you know, the accidents, this, that, the other, but then we made it. But yeah, it was like, it's one of those moments, you know, you have moments in your life that you'll never forget. Like when 9/11 hit, I remember like I was sitting watching CNBC on my couch in my living room when it happened. Like that's over 20 years ago. It's like, I'll never forget. I was in New Zealand in the back of our friend's car when I got the email and it's like, Mikey, got this for you.
Oh, that was recently.
Yes.
Oh, wow. And
I was like, oh my God, this is the best trip ever. I got the private label trademark.
Yeah, for sure.
So one other thing about the trademarks is you have categories of trademarks. So you can still have people have the same name, but it's under different categories. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So it's not blanket ownership. Trademarks are never blanket ownership. You have to get trademarks in relation to the goods or services that you're providing. So essentially, if somebody has a trademark for private label and let's say they sell... I don't know. I can't even think of anything. A widget. They sell a widget. That's not going to be in direct competition with what you're selling. So they could, you know, own their trademark for that product or that service, and you could own yours for yours. An example of this, another one is Dove. Dove chocolate, Dove soap. Nobody's going to be confused, you know, that Dove chocolate is the same producer as Dove soap because they're in different categories, different lanes, as I like to say. And so they can coexist without any consumer confusion.
So what happens if Dove soap decides they want to create an edible Dove soap? How does that work?
Ooh, that'd be interesting. I think for the most part in that scenario, you might have a little bit of trademark infringement there because now they're kind of moving into the lane of like edible candies or edible something. But it would be interesting because it's kind of soap. Yeah. So it's still kind of in its own lane. I would be interested.
Or maybe like an edible oil because they have like Dove lotion, like, you know, something like that.
I don't actually know what category that would fall in. So see, it would come down to what category is that going to be in? Is that going to be in like the candy category where Dove already lives and breathes? Or is that still going to be in like an oil-based category where they're already registered?
Makes sense. That makes sense. Okay, so let's get into like the basics because some people sometimes use trademark and copyright synonymous. So what is the difference between a getting something copywritten or trademarked?
So trademarked is going to protect your brand identifiers. So you can think your slogan, your logo, your words, any special catchphrases. And then a copyright is specifically going to cover original works of art. So you can think of maybe course manuals, or if you have a specific website, the copy on that website, emails, things like that.
So would you recommend someone get their logo copyrighted? Okay. Copyrighted before they get their business name trademarked. Like, for example, if they're like, I can only do one or the other right now, which one would you recommend first?
I would recommend trademarks.
Okay.
And the reason is because trademarks are going to protect your brand in relation to the classes or categories you want to be in. And usually I say when you're trying to determine whether you should trademark your logo or trademark your name first, it's usually going to be your name because then you're going to own your name regardless of how you style it, right? Versus when you trademark a logo, logos change over time. You know, think about Nike or McDonald's, they evolve and they change, but the name McDonald's is still the brand name.
Right. That makes sense.
That actually happened to us because many years ago, I trademarked the logo for Private Label Extensions. That used to be our name, Private Label Extensions, before we shortened it to Private Label. I couldn't even get the name trademark for Private Label Extensions. Of course, I was using a different legal team at the time. And then I'm kind of like, well, I don't even use the logo. What the heck am I going to do with this? But I wish I had the name Private Label Extensions. Now, I guess you can go, or technically I can go back, they say after a certain amount of time, and it's a little easier to trademark the name, like they said, maybe 5 years later. Is that true?
So sometimes what happens is there are two types of registers. There is the principal register, which gives you the broadest and kind of best protection. Mm-hmm. And there's a supplemental register that gives you protection, but not quite to the higher standard. So what happens is for some names that are deemed to be kind of too descriptive or describe the services that you provide. So for example, if I wanted to trademark the beauty lawyer, it would likely end up on the supplemental register because I am describing the services that I provide, which lawyer services, you know, legal services to beauty professionals. So then they'll put you on the supplemental register. And once you live there for around 5 years, you can come back and say, hey, I know you said that my name was just descriptive, but actually people know it. They recognize it. I have name recognition. And so it's called acquired distinctiveness. So usually around the 5-year mark, you can argue that your name or your brand name now has acquired distinctiveness.
Nice. Okay.
That's,
I like that
information.
So for people who are looking to get into the hair industry, maybe they're just getting ready to start their brand. They're going to go ahead and trademark their business name. What would you say they need to do when it comes to preparing to get that done? So they haven't even done their website. They haven't done anything yet. But what do they need to do in preparation for getting that trademark?
I think two things. One, you should really make sure that the name that you want to trademark is going to be something that, one, is trademarkable, but two, is kind of unique enough to stand out. Because sometimes people will develop a name or develop a brand and they love it. And then we go to do the search that I said that everyone should do. And then you realize that you're not going to be able to get it. And at that point, people are really attached to their brand name and they don't really want to, you know.
That is very true.
Get away from it. So one of the things I tell people is when you're thinking of a name, kind of try to steer away from the general names that you think about. One of my favorite brands is Skintrition, and I love it because I just think it's a cool name.
Yeah.
They put together two words, right? Like skin and nutrition. Yeah. And obviously when you hear it, you think immediately like, oh great, it's nutrition for my skin. You get where it's going.
Yeah.
Right? But at the time, it wasn't a thing. Like nobody, it wasn't a brand. Nobody was using like that kind of terminology. Now when you hear it, you immediately think of the brand. But if you can merge or marry two words together, if you can think of words that aren't related to your industry, like Apple for electronics, if you can think of things like that, you're going to be much more successful at trying to trademark your brand. So really kind of start with an original name and then two, figure out exactly what you want to do with your brand. Do you want to have a podcast? Are you also going to do hair services? In addition to that, are you going to do education? Because like Mikey was saying, you want to know what categories you need to register
in. That was going to be my next question. If someone was starting a hair brand, but then also wanted to get into doing courses or like educational things, is that considered a different category? Would they have to be registered in both of those categories?
Yes. So for beauty professionals, there are typically a couple of categories that most beauty professionals fall into, because I think that as beauty professionals, we all kind of have different lanes and different areas of revenue that we're trying to tap into. So one of the main is all obviously going to be your services. So hair services, hair extensions, you know, whatever is going to be one of your categories, salon services. Mm-hmm. Another category that's often used by beauty professionals is education.
Okay.
That's another really high one up there. Education and entertainment, you know, entertainment's going to cover your podcasting. And then products. So if you plan to use your brand name on your own specific product line, like an extension line or hair tools or something like that, that's going to be separate categories as well.
Okay. So are they paying for separate categories? Or is that just filing in different categories?
Well, every category that you want to file in has a filing fee because the U.S. government wants their money, honey.
Right, so, that's true.
So it is going to be $350 per class that you want to file.
Got it. Okay. Makes sense. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, it's interesting because I filed two trademarks at the same time. One was private label, which I knew this is going to be fun.
And
the second one was kind of like a secret brand that I'm launching. And we filed at the same time.
Okay, secret brand. You want to talk about
stuff going on. Secret brand. Secret brand. And it kind of is related to the, you know, like Apple computer, right? I'll tell you off camera. And that one, when I tell you, it was just like, boom.
Easy.
Complete.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. I got the certificate. I am good. You know, and it does make a huge difference. And he even said like, yeah, this one shouldn't be an issue. But it's nice to know a little bit ahead of time because the trademark process is long. Like even I say it was smooth, but even at smooth, it still took maybe 8 months or a year.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
Isn't that common? Yeah.
So on average, trademarks are taking about 12 and a half to 13 months from the time you file to the time you get your registration.
Wow. So with filing for the trademark, I know some people may say, hey, I want to do it on my own. I'll be the first to tell you, let people do what they're good at. If you have, get a professional. If you're going to file a trademark, get a professional. So as a professional, what are some things that you would recommend for people who are saying, I think I want to just do this on my own? What are the reasons for why they should not just go and try to file on their own?
So I'll give you a good statistic. On average, first time filing across the board has like a 71% refusal rate.
Wow.
So, and that's, you know, just in general.
Mm-hmm.
So if 71% of applications are getting refused the first time, and by refusal, that means an office action. So basically the examiner at the USPTO is saying something's wrong with this. Either we don't like the description, either it's too close to someone else's name. There's something wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
Now with an attorney, they're going to know ahead of time, you know, some of those things. So your description's going to be on point, right? They're already going to do the search to make sure that there's nothing else out there that could potentially cause you problems. But even if you get hit with an office action or that preliminary refusal, they're going to know how to get you over that hump, right? They're going to be like, okay, this is really easy. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We know the arguments to make to kind of get you over that hump. So I just really think that in addition to kind of the experience and the expertise, they also will go in. I know I go in and I talk to you about your business. Okay, what are you doing right now? What do you have planned in 18 months? Because we have things like, you have, you know, secret brand coming out.
Right.
These are things we know about, but if you are just doing your application yourself, you might be like, all I do is hair. So I'm just going to put it down for hair. Knowing in 18 months, you plan to launch an online course.
Yeah.
But you didn't put that in your application. Well, now you have to wait a whole nother 12 and a half to 13 months do just that. Because you can't go back and edit. Like once it's out there, you can't add classes to your application because everything in trademarks is so date specific. So you need to kind of get it right the first time. And if you don't, then you're going to wait again another 12 and a half months for a new trademark application for a new category.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. That's a lot. So if you, it's basically hire a professional. Hire a professional.
You know, I always tell people,
it's all said and done.
I would not. And I think because trademarks are transactional, they're like, oh, I'll do it. And I just am always like, well, I wouldn't go represent myself in court on a murder charge myself. Right. Yeah. Like, yeah, technically you can, but I wouldn't go do it. Yeah. I'm going to hire the professional that knows, you know, the law and knows
everything
what to
down
do.
To it. We're not trying to sit in prison, baby.
I'm out of the country. Okay. You guys can hire your lawyers. I'm gone.
I'm not going to handle my own divorce if I'm getting divorced.
Right. Yeah.
There might need forensic accounting. There might be money stashed somewhere. I don't know. Like, I'm not going to do it. You only
We need
know
somebody who's going to find all the coins.
All the money.
Okay.
I like money stashing. Yeah. I'm not speaking my language here.
I mean, it's really important to kind of like hire the professional. I always say kind of stay in your own lane too, because this happens sometimes with accountants, and it's nothing to accountants, but sometimes they will give incorrect information on like LLCs or trademarks. And I'm like, I don't give any accounting or CPA information because money is not my lane, right? Legal is my lane. And so it just kind of all wraps into that.
That's very true, because a lot of times when we were doing like the in-person hair business classes and all that, a lot of people had questions about, well, should I register my company as an LLC or what type of bank account should I get? And one thing that Mikey and I have always done is, we're not CPAs and we're not attorneys. We're going to direct you to CPAs and attorneys. We're going to tell you what we did, but we're not going to tell you this is what you should do. So I think it's important that you go to the experts to get the expert advice that you need.
Definitely, for sure.
Yeah. So for someone who is new to this process, they're just understanding what a trademark is, why it's important. Can you kind of give a high level overview on what they should expect when they come to you to actually get a trademark?
Yeah, so one of the first things that we're going to do is we're going to talk about your brand overall in general. Mm-hmm. Kind of what plans do you have for it? Where do you see it going? So I can get a good understanding of what all you might need to protect in your beauty-based business. Then from there, I'm going to talk to you about the process so that you're not going into it blind. I'm going to tell you it's going to take 12 and a half months on average.
And they're not hitting you up every month like, hey,
right.
What's
I'm
going to
tell you, like, listen, you could leave today, get pregnant tomorrow, and still won't have you'll have a baby before you have a trademark. Like, legitimately, it's kind of crazy. And so I'll go through the process of that with you, talk to you about the overall trademark process. So from the search to the application, after you apply, you're waiting about 8.5 months on average before an attorney at the USPTO even looks at your application.
Wow. Why does it take so long? Why is it such a long process?
I just think it's like short staff. Applications, there are like 66,000 applications every month. Like,
wow, okay.
Just so many applications go in every month that there's only so many attorneys. So you have to wait for it to come across their desk, like right? So you're just waiting for a long time. Then after that, assuming that there's no issues, you're going to go to publication. Publication's 30 days where they basically kind of say like, hey, everyone, Rihanna wants to register She Trademarks. Speak now or forever hold your peace.
Mm.
And there's a 30-day opposition window where people can oppose you, which is what we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Like if somebody files your name before you, but you were using it longer, that's the opposition period, that 30-day publication window. Then if everything goes good, nobody stands up and says like, wait a minute, this is my brand. then you should register if you're using it. And that's kind of like an overview of the process of what to expect. And that takes 12 and a half, 13 months from start to finish.
Wow. Okay. So basically you're going to get in and it's not an overnight process. So do not hit up Attorney Rihanna every 30 days to ask her what is the status of your trademark. But in the meantime, so when they get trademarked, it's the R that they use, correct? The registered trademark. Can you talk about the difference between the TM and the R?
Sure.
Because I see people interchange and use it very loosely.
So TM is for unregistered marks. It's basically like, let's say you started the trademark process, you filed your application, you're waiting.
Okay.
You can use the TM. Let's say you are haven't filed the process yet, but you are letting the public know that you have common law rights to this name.
Okay.
Meaning, I'm already using it. It's already in use. I am claiming ownership to this name. Registered, the R circle, is reserved specifically for people who have registered trademarks to put the public on notice. Like, hey, this brand is a registered trademark. I have protection under the USPTO. And it's actually, fun fact, it's actually illegal to use the registered trademark, the R symbol, without being registered.
I believe that.
Yeah.
I'm sure it is illegal. So let's get into the people that do use it. And I mean, are there any... Can they get in trouble?
You can get fined for it.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. Fines. You can get fined for it.
Okay. But that's not like the trademark police aren't going around saying like, you're not trademarked.
The trademark police aren't going around saying you're not trademarked. But like when it does come up and they do find out about it, yeah, you could definitely get fined.
Okay.
And then real quick, going back a few steps, one thing you can do. So if you have your, if you're working with someone and you know your trademark's in process, you can actually go to the USPTO.gov, not .com website, you can search your name and they actually update the process so you can see. So you don't have to keep reaching out to your attorney who's busy and also very expensive. You can do that yourself. And I tell you, when it's publicized, so you have to wait the 30 days because it's in the publication, it is a little bit stressful because you are just waiting to hear from your attorney that, oh, somebody said this is like, you know, my brand too or something like that. But you can keep yourself updated on the USPTO.gov website.
You know what's funny about that is I always say kind of the publication is like, to me, the last, you're so close to the finish line of the publication. So if you've done a thorough search, if you're like one of those brand names that's completely unique or your Skintricians, you really shouldn't have any problems during that portion. So I kind of like to say it's kind of when you're at the end of a wedding and it's like, hey, I'm going to now pronounce these two people husband and wife as long as, you know, no one has a reason as to why they shouldn't be. As long as nobody stands up with that like big swollen belly and you're like, oh yeah, I know that man. You know what I mean? Right? Like that's my brand. Yeah. As long as no,
whoa, what kind of rom-com are we in right now?
Wow.
As long as nobody stands up and says that's my brand, right? Then you're good to go. So with a thorough search and with a unique name, the opposition period shouldn't really be too rattling. It should be like smooth.
So you can breathe after. Yeah. Once you see that, it's like, okay, it's mine.
Yeah, usually almost. The hurdle is like the, what else is out there? And is the USPTO examining attorney going to say my name is too similar to someone else's?
Got it. So do you get into the, so we know about we need to be trademarking the name of our business, but what about when it comes to the business classifications like LLC, S-Corp, partnership, all of that? What do you typically recommend people who are just starting off getting?
So that's going to really depend on kind of the unique situation of the company, right?
Okay.
If you have one or more people, like let's say you've got two people or three people, you might decide a partnership is better. You might decide that an LLC with equal ownership is better. For a single person, let's say like your single hairstylist that is also selling products or doing other things, courses, an LLC is going to be one of the easiest business entities to, one, get signed up for and two, manage because it has less corporate formalities than your traditional C Corp. And then S Corp, we gets talked about a lot. People say, I'm an S Corp. I'll say, hey, do you have a business? Yeah, I'm an S Corp. S Corp is actually a tax designation.
Right.
So S Corp is
that.
Not a business entity in and of itself. You are usually like a regular corporation or an LLC that is being taxed as an S Corp.
Yeah. So I think
like pass through. So
yeah,
taxes.
I had to learn that because we're registered as an LLC, but we are taxed as an S Corp. And, we ended up having to like go on payroll and do all that different stuff as a tax. Okay. So an S Corp is not necessarily, you're not registering your business as an S Corp. So there is an LLC, a partnership, And what are the other ones? Because I lost the
corporation, like corporation. A regular, okay. You know, like the ink, yeah. Like yes. Ink dot or okay. A corporation. Go ahead.
At any point, would you recommend someone to register their business as an ink or corporation if they're just starting off?
If you're just starting off, probably not. It's okay. Going to kind of depend on what you need. Some people are like, I want to get investors. I want, you know, venture capitalists. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to do something like that, they're going to want corporation where there are public stocks that can be issued and things like that, as got opposed it. To kind of a closely owned LLC. So that's kind of an indication or a time in which a corporation might be better for you. But if you're just starting out and you're like, it's just going to be me, mm-hmm. then an LLC is going to be the easiest way for you to manage and get that asset protection.
Got it.
Okay. Yeah, I always like to recommend an LLC just because it's so much easier to separate your finances. Mm-hmm. So when it comes time to do your books at the end of the year, you got your business bank account, you're not running personal stuff funds. I hope through this business yes, bank account, sure. Guys. You're not just writing off everything.
Co-mingling funds right. is the fastest way to get your asset protection gone.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
So just, it's so easy. And that's the thing, like people are like, oh, I still got to do it. I'm like, it's so easy. It's so inexpensive. Like just get it done. Get yeah. started properly in the beginning. If you start off in the beginning doing things the right way, your business life will be so much easier.
To yeah.
I will tell you a lawyer secret that the lawyers may come for me for. But I think if you are a one person LLC, you can get your LLC set up by yourself on your Secretary of State website.
Yeah.
I think it
I
is
did that.
Pretty yeah. easy to do it yourself. Some people will be like, you know, some attorneys will tell you like, no, come to me. I'll charge you $1,600 to do your LLC. It's really easy and straightforward to do on the website of yeah. your Secretary of State self. You can also get, after you do that, then some of the attorneys offer templates for operating agreements because mm-hmm. you do need an operating agreement.
Yeah.
So an operating agreement, but you can, you know, really kind of cut your costs there on an LLC. I would say cut your costs on an LLC and then spend that money on your trademark yeah. and don't do it vice
She's
versa.
Like, come over here. Right. And
don't be like, hey, I'm going to hire the attorney to do the LLC and then I'm going to yeah. trademark myself because trademarks Absolutely are a lot not. More convoluted. They're a lot more complex. Like that's not the way to do it. But your LLC and your EIN, do you know people are charging to set up EINs?
That is ridiculous.
Minutes.
If that,
two
maybe.
Minutes.
And it's free.
Yeah. Do not pay because that's another thing. People will go on the website and they're like, oh, they think they're landing on the IRS website and they've clicked like that ad at the very top. And
yeah.
then they go through all the process and they think they're going to hit submit and it's like, they want $200. And I'm like, it is free. It is yeah. $3.99 on the appropriate website and it is so easy to do.
That is crazy.
It's actually funny because I just made a video on my Air Business Blueprint YouTube channel, which you should subscribe to. A little shameless plug there. And I was actually doing that and I was showing people, I was like, look, let me show you how easy it is to get your tax ID. Of course, the IRS website, when you click it, is like, we are down at the moment.
Oh,
it's down
yeah.
all the time. I but it's like,
oh, is it like after God. A certain time period?
I think sometimes okay. when they do maintenance at like odd hours. And so yeah. what time are you trying to get on?
I was probably like
5:30, 6 a.m.
Yeah. yeah. So they're probably still in the maintenance. Yeah.
I think I was trying to get on like, it had to be after midnight one day and it wasn't working. And I was like, maybe then the next morning it worked. And I was like, okay, maybe it's just.
I teach this course and in the course we do EIN numbers. And so of course it was like, the day that we had scheduled for EINs, we went to do EINs. And like you said, it was not working. And I was like, all right, well, we will switch. We will do something else on today's session. And
yeah.
we'll come back to EINs. Yeah.
I'm actually surprised they don't charge for it. Like even some nominal fee. Because think about how many EINs are registered in a day, like $10 something. Because mm-hmm. the government tries to get you every which way they can.
They do.
Absolutely.
But you know what's interesting about that? Is we don't really pay to get a social security number. And I always equate your EIN to like your business's social security number.
Yeah.
Really, they're just using it to identify you so that you can get your bank accounts registered in the EIN's number, you know, for payroll and tax purposes for your business, which is how they identify us, right? For payroll and tax services right. by your social. So I kind of think that's why.
That makes sense. Yeah, that's actually a really good. Yeah, that's true.
I'm not saying IRS start charging for it.
Right. If you're listening.
Ideas.
No.
If you're listening.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Mm-mm. That is hilarious. Okay. So what is the, you can give everyone your information when it comes to how they can find you. What is your process with actually getting, do you require them go through a consultation before they purchase the trademarking services?
Yeah. So the trademark service, we start out with a consultation. Okay. That's kind of the time to see, like, do you need a trademark? If you do, what kind of trademark do you need? Logo, okay. Wordmark. You might need multiple trademarks. Like, what exactly do we have going on with the intellectual property in your business?
Okay.
And then from there, the trademark process would happen after that.
Okay.
But that's available online, easy self-scheduling at shetrademarks.com. If you are interested in trademarks, that would be the easiest place to go. You can find a time that's convenient for you, that's on my calendar, and that is open, and that's kind of the first place to start.
Awesome. And then before we go, do you have any traumatic stories to scare someone into actually getting their trademark that okay. you've gone through?
So I will tell you, I had a client recently, actually 1 month, last year in September was the month of cease and desist, I will call it. My schedule was filled up with cease and desist letters from people who had received them from trademark owners. And I had this one girl, and she had just kind of started her business. And she was in business for maybe like 2 to 3 years. She had won a couple awards in like her state already for the business. And she came to me and she's like, I got this letter. And this was like a West Coast company. She got a letter from an East Coast company.
Oh, wow.
Right. And she's like, I got this letter and I don't know why they care about me. Like, I'm just a small mom and pop shop. Like, I'm all the way over here and they're telling me that I have to stop using this name. And anyways, I read the letter. I did my research and yeah, she had to stop using the name. It was like the difference of, I'm going to give you an example. Let's say it was a wax studio and let's say that her salon on the West Coast was called the Pretty Kitty Wax Studio. Mm-hmm. Right. And the salon on the East Coast was called Pretty Kitty, right? Mm. So the only difference, and some people get this confused a lot. They're like, yeah, but mine's different. I have a the and I have a wax studio at the end of it. Like my name is different than their name. But I want everyone to think about what is the memorable part of that name.
Pretty Kitty.
Pretty Kitty,
yeah.
Right? And so like you're not going to think about the, you're not going to think about the wax studio. Pretty Kitty is what you're going to think about. And so once we evaluated it, she had to change her name. And I mean, it was waterworks, like rightfully so, right? She loves her brand. She built her brand, but she was so sad. She had just put up a big fancy, like $10,000, like, you know, sign on the outside.
I would have cried building. Too.
You know, she has all of these like products that she was selling with this stuff on it. So now you've got product relabeling. They wanted her to destroy the products, right? They had $10,000 sign that she has to like take down and now get a new sign, right? And then websites, logos, like the $2,500 for your trademark is so much cheaper than like $25,000 cost in rebranding.
Yeah.
And all the other things that go along with it.
Wow. So my husband actually did his trademark himself. This had to be like 5 or 6 years ago. And he trademarked sex therapy. And he got a cease and desist letter from Sax Fifth Avenue that spells, they spell it S-A-K-S Fifth Avenue. And he was doing S-A-X therapy. It was like nowhere near the same thing. His category was, I don't even think it was clothing, maybe. Maybe it was clothing because he had shirts and stuff, but he's a musician. So they sent him a cease and desist letter, and he was like, I'm not about to fight with Saks. It's Saks Fifth Avenue. What am I going to do?
It's true. And sometimes in trademark disputes, it kind of comes down to who has the bigger pockets.
Yeah.
Truthfully, because even if, let's say, you are the person that filed first, but not first to use.
Right.
Right. So now the small mom and pop company is coming after and they're like, hey, but I have like first use.
Yeah.
I was using it first. Okay. Well, they have to file an opposition. They have to get an attorney to do that. Like, you're talking $5,000 easy just to get an attorney to sign their name to something.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you have to be able to fight through the litigation process, through discovery, through depositions. Those all cost money.
Yeah.
Right. You have to pay the attorney fees on that. So sometimes it comes down to who has the bigger pockets. I had a client who was wanting to register something and, well, actually it was a potential client, but she wanted to register this name and she got an opposition or a cease and desist letter from Calvin Klein, right? For a cologne they had.
Yeah.
And she was like, but I, you know, but it's different and I was using this name first in this category. And I was like, yeah, but Calvin Klein could quite literally spend hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Millions.
To like get this name if they want this name.
Yeah.
Like, they can just drag it out, spend money on top of money on attorney's fees, depositions, on all these things to where like the smaller little company could be kind of SOL, which is why if you're the smaller little company trying to protect your brand, you have to do it in the beginning on the forefront.
Definitely, yeah, because guess who's not going toe-to-toe with Calvin Klein?
Or Saks Fifth Avenue.
Or Saks Fifth Avenue, absolutely. Yes, I love that. Thank you for sharing those stories.
No problem.
So where can people find you? Website, social media handles, all of that.
Instagram at She Trademarks. That is where I give all of the legal gems for the beauty professionals. Lots of tips and tricks for your legal there. And then also, if you want DIY contract templates or courses, you can find those on SheTrademarks.com, as well as any scheduling links for consultations and things like that.
Awesome. Is there anything that you didn't cover that you wanted to share, or any last words of advice that you have?
Couple last words of advice is, if you are doing services, I want to make sure that you have lawyer drafted contracts and consent forms. So your intake forms, your consent forms for like hair extensions, hair coloring, perms, all of that stuff, because people do sue, right? And then business insurance, we didn't touch on that, but business insurance.
We can talk about that if you want to go into
that. Let's do it.
Okay.
Business insurance is going to be so important, because if you're doing any type of salon services, you have two potential liabilities. One, the service that you're actually providing. Mm-hmm. Let's say an allergic reaction. Let's say something isn't properly disinfected. Somebody gets a rash or an infection. Your professional liability insurance is going to cover you professionally for that if a claim is made. Earlier, I talked about how I worked for an insurance company. That's how you would get protected. You would file a claim. An attorney would get assigned. You're now covered. And then in addition to that, if somebody's walking into your salon, they slip and fall on some hair that wasn't swept or something like that, right? You want to make sure you have general liability insurance for that. That's going to cover that. So make sure you get your business insurance in place. That's like another really good thing to do. And then if you're having any type of employees, make sure that they're properly classified. Those are hefty fines for 1099 contractors versus like real employees.
Yeah.
And so those are just, you know, some tips and tricks for everybody listening.
Love it. So if someone goes into business and does not get their business license, but ends up having, let's say someone come in, slip and fall, they could be sued and they can lose their license?
Well, what happens is, if you're sued and you have no insurance, it's the exact same way as if you get in a car accident and have no insurance, right? If that person gets injured, they're coming after somebody for the money.
Yeah.
You're a business owner, you are presumably making revenue, right? So you're making money. So then, just like with car insurance, if you get in a car accident, something happens, they're going to cover the fees. They're going to cover the payment. But with you, if you don't have it, then you're out of pocket attorney's fees. Let's say they get a $60,000 settlement because something happened to their scalp or whatever. They lost hair. They're paid out $60K. They're coming to you. They're taking their judgment. They're walking over, they're handing it to Bank of America because they had a PI find out that that's where you bank. And they're like, hey, I don't know what's going on with the savings, but it looks like there's about $30K in there. We'd like it because we have this judgment from the court saying I'm entitled to $60K. And so now, if you were saving money to start a new brand, if you were saving money to open your own salon space or buy a house or send your kid to college, it could be gone just like that. So that's why business insurance is really helpful.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So get business insurance on top of making sure that you get your business name trademarked. So this has been a very great conversation. We appreciate you for taking time out of your day to come and share with us. Mikey, anything?
You guys got to probably listen to this twice, because there's so much good information here.
Definitely. So, and I think it's important, because a lot of times we get into we're excited about starting a new business, like you said, the professional photos and the logos and all this different stuff, but we don't take time because it's not as sexy to get a trademark. But I think it's arguably one of the most important things when you actually start a business, because you don't want to end up like our girl in California and you're just sad and crying a river because someone else has your name and you can't use it anymore. So now you're kicking out a lot more money. So I just think it's important for you to, in the beginning of the ideation process, to actually learn and start getting a hold of getting your trademark done. So thank you so much for joining us, sharing all the information and gems. And make sure you guys check out this episode, like, comment, and subscribe. And we'll be back with more episodes soon.
Later.
Bye. Thanks for having me.